Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Tony, I'm afraid we can't hear you. You can probably hear me, but we can't hear you. So we're going to have to ply on without you for just a little minute till we get our systems up and going. So it is Wednesday, the 20th of May. Coming up today, we ask Matt O'Hanlon if the lockdown is suiting Davy Fitz. Premier League clubs back training, Stephen Elliott gives his opinion.
Miller. Elliott. Stephen Elliott's got a shooting chance. Oh, that's terrific!
And our Wednesday legend is Donegal danger man Brendan Devaney. All that and much, much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Now, there is a little bit of breaking news today. Munster player Tylan Blaindall has been forced to retire with an injury. It's very, very difficult for anyone of that age to retire. 29 years of age is so young, and especially when it is an injury, it is very, very hard for people to come to terms with that. And we'll be chatting to Donegal about the impact that Blaindall has had on the Munster team since he arrived back in 2014. And I think a lot of rugby fans will remember back in 2014 that when he did arrive, he was injured straight away, and Anthony Foley got a lot of credit for saying that we had to look at the player, that he wasn't a piece of meat, and that they had to make sure they were doing what was best for him. And that was, I think, a major reflection of what Anthony Foley was about and also what Munster was about as well. Now I think we might have Donegal back.
Donegal, Marie,
good timing. Look at that.
Apologies, I left you do the whole intro. I left you, yeah, sorry about that. It's that red button, that giant red button. That's all I have to press, isn't that it?
I'm just going to blame, it's something in Cork anyway, we'll blame Cork.
Oh, that typical, blame the rebels, no chance I'm having that today. I think I was overly excited listening to Jenny Green. Did you hear Evelyn winning the grand?
I didn't, but I did hear July. It reminded me of the summer and GAA, and it actually made me sad. But fair play to Evelyn, I missed her winning the grand.
20th of May, and Jenny's blasting out July. It actually reminds me of a brilliant wedding I was at, one of the lads' wedding, where Jim Williams, Mundy was actually there, of course he was, Celtic Tiger. Yeah, he sang, and I remember Jim Williams, legendary Australian number six, and played for ACT. It was the only song Jim knew when he was there. Sing it again. Sorry, that's terrible.
You were so low key about that. You were like, "Yeah, Monday was there." You know, like I was. It almost passed me by.
Tiger, of course he was. Yeah. He came in the helicopter.
So Tyler Blaindall, Donegal, like it's so unfortunate. 29 years of age. When we did get to see him play, we saw how much talent he had and how much potential he had. But to be so young and forced to retire, I don't even know how you'd cope with that. It's a lot.
Yeah, and I think we've brilliant guys on tonight. Stephen and Brendan will give their insight on it too. It is tough, Marie, when it isn't your call, and it isn't like this is a crazy thing to say, but the fairy tale end, only some players get it. And to be fair, only some deserve it. You know, that like, I always look at Dricko's one where there was blimps with his face on it, and like he deserved every bit of that. Brian O'Driscoll deserves that type of a send-off. But some people kind of head out the exit door without even getting a curtain call, and I think we're going to see a lot of that over the coronavirus. You know, we're going to run out of time to say thanks to so many of these players. But you nailed it with Blaindall. He was a guy that came in, unfortunately got injured, and I think Munster and the RFU could be really proud of how they treated him. And you can talk about player welfare, but when you show it with guys, and look, it was unfortunate because when he came over, the excitement about him, I was in the squad at the time, he captained New Zealand under 20s, you know, everyone was chatting about him being the next kind of Dan Carter, so there was great excitement. And you're right, Anthony Foley, you know, he kept on going with, let's look after this young man, let's look do the right thing for him. And then that was reflected in Tyler being a brilliant player on the squad, because what can be tough sometimes with squad players is they can be negative, and especially when they're injured. He was never that. He was selfless for the team. So wish him and his wife and little child all the best. They have another one on the way. So hopefully he sticks around for a bit.
We were chatting a little bit about perhaps Munster getting some new coaching staff. Do you think that he would be somebody that might be an addition to the Munster backroom?
Yeah, he would be of the ilk anyway. Certainly he'd know, like we were chatting about last night, he'd know the culture for sure. Of course, you always want the experience, but by all accounts, there was a reason he was. Do you remember the running the water bottles? Because he's quite a calming influence and he's able to deliver a message really well. So you talk to an awful lot of lads, he could have been coaching during that time he was off anyway. So I think sometimes it is good. But it's like we chatted last night, it's where Johan van Gran sees that role, because, you know, they're well equipped now and he would have to bring something to it. But I know from a player's point of view, he's well respected, so standing in the front of the room would be easy.
I imagine as well that a lot of backroom teams are going to become quite constricted after the coronavirus. Like anyone that was maybe not having a very dedicated, specific role might find it hard to keep their jobs.
Exactly. Like, you're going to have video analysis guys rubbing players down before games. Everyone's going to be multitasking. Yeah, it is. Because you're right. Like, even the news today about Ty Kennelly with the... I nearly went Australian on us with the Sydney Swans.
You're good at the Australian accent, though.
He sounded like he was from Cheers or somewhere American. But the Sydney Swans, just what you're saying there, already, you know, they're responding by kind of standing down some of their management. So things will tighten, and this is an unfortunate thing to say. It mightn't happen on the talent end where you see the players, but it could definitely on the kind of coaching staff, and that'll be tough across all sports, won't it?
Yeah, and I think especially like maybe over the last decade, as sports science has expanded so much, there is nearly a coach for everything. And yeah. Now sleeping, eating, and now when they're going to be taking a cold hard look at things in their backroom teams and like intercounty teams as well, because they have expanded. We've seen pictures that will prove that and how big they've gotten over the last few years. But there'll be a lot of excess baggage there now, I'd say, cut.
What about your mate, Jurgen Klopp? Delighted. Like, first day at school, being back for Liverpool.
I know. It was amazing.
It just shows what type of school life he had. Everyone else was kicking and screaming going in the gates. Not Jurgen. Delighted to bounce in.
I was watching them all on the telly going into training earlier on. It was great.
Yeah.
Exciting. But anyway, look, life is for everybody upside down, and GAA players are some of the people that have been affected. I think this time of year, when you look outside, or if you are outside, like I'm sure many of us were today in our gardens, sunning ourselves, dreaming about those good old days of going to hurling matches in the best weather on the hard ground. And it's tough. Like, it's tough now because we don't have that and we don't know when we're going to get it. So because I'm feeling the pain, I'm going to bring Matt O'Hanlon in now to share that pain with me. Matt, whatever about me, just as a fan, as a player, it must be so difficult on a day like today when it's just so perfect to know that you don't have anything coming up for a while.
Yeah, for sure. Just listening to you there, and yeah, you're putting me into the depression, knowing that I'm not going to have a game when the weather's like that. But look, you kind of touched on it there. It's a pretty unique situation where, you know, we'd be in the middle of a Leinster Championship where you gear your season towards it, and that's been taken away from us. And not only that, you know, you go from months on end seeing each other four or five times per week to that being taken away. So, you know, it's having a massive impact on players and teams and just general well-being, you know. But, you know, we're trying to make do with their individual training programs and your Zoom calls and what have you. But, you know, it's very hard to replace, you know, what we used to have.
Matt, momentum is so hard to build in sport, and you were generating momentum. To have this little roadblock now in the middle of it, how can you, you know, get that back on track, or how will you be able to readjust?
Yeah, look, that's the challenge facing every intercounty team at the moment, really. You know, obviously, off the back of last year, you know, having some success, you know, this will be the year that we'd hope to kick on. And I think we showed signs of that throughout the league, and we're building and building. And, you know, our training plan was all focused around peaking at this time of year. But now we've had to relook at things, and, you know, there's new information coming through on a weekly basis. So we've got to adjust what we're doing to try keep ourselves in the best position and try not lose the base of work we've done in terms of fitness and strength and conditioning. And then try to, I suppose, aim to peak when we know there's going to be games if that comes down the line. So, yeah, it's tricky, you know, and S&C coaches, I'd say, are rechanging plans on a weekly basis and phone calls and inter-county managers at the moment. But, you know, that's the world that we're living in at the moment, and what wasn't possible 10 weeks ago might be possible in 10 weeks' time. So you just don't know what's going to happen yet.
Matt, every single player or athlete that I know are like ultimate competitors, and trying to get them to dial anything down is impossible. Like, they see, anyone that I've interviewed over the last few weeks, they see this time as an opportunity to either fix something, to get better with something, to, you know, be fitter, faster, stronger if they can. Like, is it realistically possible to kind of take a little break?
Yeah, look, there's elements to it, you know. I think every player on an individual level has their own motivations, and this window of opportunity doesn't come around too often where you can focus on things that you may want to improve that away from the group training, whether that's, you know, your speed, your acceleration, your agility or your strength, whatever that may be. So I know guys are working individually with our S&C coaches to pinpoint some things they want to get better at. So that is a silver lining, and I guess if you can kind of track how you're improving there, that gives guys motivation. But equally, I think it's important for guys to take a bit of a step back to, you know, not burn the candle at both ends, because you don't know how long we're going to be in this situation. And, you know, you need to maintain it to a certain level, but you also need to leave a bit in the tank to push for when we know that there's going to be games coming up.
Yeah, that can be the frustrating bit, the bit of a holding pattern in training. Whatever about your group training, I saw we're in a WhatsApp group on Ireland's Fittest Family, and I saw a photo of Davy at the moment. Whatever your strength and conditioners are doing with him, he looks in great shape.
I'm not sure what kind of program he's got him on, but maybe he could be doing the same stuff as us, who knows. But I think he's getting out and about and getting plenty of steps in, so he's keeping himself active, which is great. And I think that's what most people are trying to do. I know that it's kind of breaking up the monotony of the days for most of the guys on the team, and we're thankful that, you know, most of us live close to facilities that we're still able to use or the countryside to be able to get out and stay active.
So how's he communicating with you? Come on, paint a picture for us now. How is this working? I have like I have a one kind of dimensional image of Davy, and it has nothing to do with Zooms or WhatsApps. It's on a sideline shouting instructions.
Well, you're right in saying that it's got nothing to do with Zooms anyway. He hasn't been on any of our Zoom calls yet. But as a team, we've been kind of communicating on a weekly basis. And it's been led by our S&C coach, just to check in with guys, how their training's been going, and to touch base on, you know, their nutrition and anything that they want to change up, just to keep guys to see each other and, you know, to be able to catch up that way. And then Davy, you know, has been catching up with players individually, and you know, selectors have kind of taken a group of five or six of the panel and kind of been checking in with guys regularly. So the lines of communication have always been open, but yeah, we're trying to get Davy onto a Zoom call now, so it might happen before we're back face to face, so who knows.
We're seeing that more and more, though. Of course, like, the old role was to just coach and to, you know, help you excel on the pitch. But I know it's close to his heart. He looks at G as people and wants the best for you off the pitch as well.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, we're a very close group. We care about each other an awful lot. And outside of sport, we always try to look out for each other in whatever we're doing and making sure guys are okay. And Davey's great at that, sensing when, you know, individual players might have something up with them, and he's always there to put his arm around you and help him whatever way he can. And I think that's one of his great strengths as a manager, and that really helps knit the bond between players too.
He must be mad to play though, is he?
Yeah, sure, look, we all are. I think you know, just to have something to look forward to and a bit of hope is what any player is looking for at the moment. You know, you set up your life to get the best out of yourself for your team, and to not know when we're aiming for realistically is quite difficult. But I know, like, the GA are working through things at the moment, and there's advisory committees there, and they're re-looking at things. So I am hopeful that there is potentially a championship in some format going to happen this year. And, you know, that would be an amazing thing. I think that would be a great lift for all inter-county players, inter-county teams, but also society in general. And I think that, you know, the GA is kind of such a hub in most communities out there that... for that to get back open and get back active would be a massive impact on, you know, people's well-being, because, you know, a lot of people are suffering out there with the lack of social interaction and, you know, not being part of their team anymore.
You don't have to mention it. Marie's climbing the walls here for any type of football, hurling, whatever could go on the TV. But of course, we want it to happen and to get out there. But you know, if we can't see it, would you rather know, Matt? Would you rather, you know, rather than holding constantly in training at the moment? You know, you can't keep tipping away, but is it quite difficult to just keep, you know, treading water?
It is, but there's still hope. I guess if you make the call now to cancel it, yeah, at least you have finality about the rest of 2020. But, you know, as I said, you don't know what's going to happen. You know, the numbers are going down and you're going through the phases and you see, you know, other sports in other countries getting back on track. You don't know what's possible. And if, you know, we continue that trend, it may be possible in the near future to have games in a different capacity and albeit, you know, adhering to the guidelines that the government set down. But I'd rather have that hope than it to be taken away completely for the year, being honest. And look, you know, the GAA are going to listen to the advice given to them by the experts that are over it. So we've got to kind of listen to that and take it as it comes.
I personally cannot see sport with fans on it. I just can't picture it. It's just not in my head for the near future anyway, Matt. And I don't know, does that mean then that there will be no inter-county hurling and football until fans have accessibility to the grounds? If it came to it and you had to play without fans and that was our only option to see Gaelic games in this year, would it be something you'd be okay with?
Yeah, I think, look, it's not everyone's first preference. Our first preference is obviously to have the championship as we know it with the stands packed, but we're living in a different world now, and I think if you gave the choice to all inter-county players out there, or players in general, would you prefer to have games without fans or no games at all? And they tell you that they would want games with no fans. It would be a different experience. It would be a different championship, but at least it is something to look forward to. At least it is a way of competing. And, you know, I think people would definitely grasp at that. I know I would jump at the chance to get out there and play a game at the moment with or without fans.
How do you think you'd perform? We'll say it was he against Kilkenny in a Leinster final. There was nobody at it. You could hear Davy and Cody and that was about it. How do you think that your performance levels would be affected in that situation?
Firstly, I probably think people would enjoy being able to hear what Davy and Brian Cody are saying.
Beep, beep.
Don't know if it'd be friendly to the airwaves, all right. But it's hard to picture what it would be like for championship. We've all played, you know, challenge games behind closed doors, and you know some of those are intense and within the camp. But I don't think any of us have really played in a scenario where you're playing a championship intensity game without fans there. Obviously, the atmosphere will be different, but I think, you know, we're all competitive players, and once we get in between the white lines, you want to get the better of your player that you're marking, and you want to get the better of the team there. And I don't think, you know, the fact that the fans aren't there is quickly forgotten about once the ball is thrown in, and I think the standards will be equally as high.
Which, yeah, I think as well, Matt, like just growing up and kind of playing these games at underage level, when there's nobody there, like I think it just transfers to the big day anyway. You know, you're used to that. Like you're used to representing your club, your county, your parish, what it means to you, that you'd be able to bring that into a different environment, a different situation, and that what you're trying to do in your end game, which is to win a match or a title, wouldn't suffer.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Completely agree. I mean, we trained behind closed doors. There's no one watching us train. And, you know, as we're growing up with very small numbers of club games and stuff like that. So the idea of it isn't alien. It's obviously alien compared to what you'd be used to in recent years with thousands of people at the match. But as I said, you know, it's not our first preference. But if it came to it, we'd be delighted to get a game in any shape or form.
It doesn't feel that long ago, Matt, when we were chatting to you last and like you were training before work, training after work, driving, commuting from Wexford to Dublin for training, working in Google and just juggling everything. What's life like now? Just like your day, your time, your setup?
Yeah, like there is silver linings, to be honest. You know, I'm not missing. I'm based in Wexford for the last while and in my family home, and like I'm not missing the, you know, the early starts and sitting in 2 hours or 3 hours of traffic on a daily basis, resting to get down to Ferns to train. You know, life is definitely slower than it has been, and I'm appreciating time at home with my family and, you know, being in the countryside and not in the city. And, you know, it is nice to do that and kind of reconnect and get this time at home that you usually wouldn't get. And I think you kind of got to appreciate it now because, you know, you kind of, the last year or so has flown by in a blink of an eye with, you know, running around doing everything, and you're, as an intercounty player, you're quite selfish with your time, and everything is organised that you need to be at XYZ place at a certain time. So I'm definitely enjoying having the freedom to kind of live my my life on my own terms for a little bit. While I can, you know.
Yeah, Matt, everyone's saying that, and everyone's using the time to kind of reflect and see areas that they'd kind of maybe cut. And like, I remember reading about you that you'd nearly have to pack for 2 days if you were heading down. You'd have to pack your lunch. Do you think there's things you've learned now that you're there? I won't chase it like that as much. You know, in hindsight now, and having been out the other side, I know what's better for me, and I'm going to just kick back a little bit more.
Yeah, I definitely think that this gives players a window of opportunity to reassess, you know, where they are in their life and what they're doing and how their lifestyle was compared to what it's like now. And they definitely think there will be changes whenever we get to this new normal. I think you'll see it even outside of sport, that people may realise that they don't need to be in Dublin to fulfil their work and job. They might need to, you know, they can live and work in the countryside, and, you know, maybe they'll get a better quality of life that way. And I think, you know, there's stuff that I'm going to learn and, you know, make some decisions based on that. That obviously sport is massive in all of our lives, and our lives are geared around it. But when that's taken away, are there other elements in your life that are lacking that you can, you know, set yourself up to make more out of?
In a recent interview on the Sunday Game, John Horan said that the issue of players putting in 30 hours a week, that one of the positives might be after this, that we don't see players putting in so much because a lot of that is travel and commuting. Could you ever see a time where training is done remotely?
I don't think so. I think the being part of a team is the bond that you have with your teammates and your manager, and getting out there together and putting in the work together as a group. I don't think that will ever be lost in team sports. As I mentioned, you might see, you know, an influx of players relocating to places closer to train and closer to their family, and that might, you know, have an impact in terms of the number of travel hours put into it. But, you know, intercounty players are competitive, and teams are competitive. They're always trying to get an edge. I don't think that the level of training that we had been doing is going to be totally impacted by this. People are still going to want to be as fit and as strong as they are to compete at the best, and that requires time to put into it. But yeah, you might see the time around travel and where people are located can definitely have a positive impact on that post this whole scenario. So we'll have to wait and see.
Why am I not surprised to hear you say that people will probably move jobs and locations rather than cut down on the hours of training?
Well, look, you say that to David Fitz, and he'll tell you what he'd prefer I did.
But Matt, it's what you mentioned there is the bonds you build up in the training sessions. I was lucky enough to be at yours once, with the worst night I've ever seen. You went out, and whatever you got out of it physically, or it was the coming together as a squad, to know that you've gone through that hardship together, is quite important in sport.
Oh, massively. You can't get away from it. I mean, I think in the cut and thrust of championship, or the cut and thrust of competing, you know, you think back to all of the hard work you've done throughout the season to get to where you are, and there's a confidence in knowing that, you know, the fellow standing beside you has been through the same thing as you had, and you've helped each other get through it. And ultimately, that's how teams create bonds and teams get better, and teams drive each other on that way. But, you know, there's no success without hard work, and being able to put that hard work in with your teammates is part of the enjoyment of team sport.
It's only a matter of time now, Matt, when we do find out when championship's coming back. And if it's in September or October, we're going to be talking about weather, and the likes of myself and Dunica are going to be predicting, or trying to predict, what teams we think is going to suit a heavy winter hurling. What do you think? Would it be something that where Wexford would be comfortable?
Yeah, I think, you've got a scenario now where you've got teams that are doing, we're all doing individualised programmes. There's going to be some teams that, you know, peak too early, some teams peak too late, and some teams get that right. But only time will tell. And we're all based off the same information. So it'll be interesting to see how teams prepare differently. But I think when it comes down to it, I don't think players or teams will care when it's played, as long as they have something to look forward to. Obviously, a winter championship is going to be, you know, ground underfoot will be softer and the game will be a little bit slower, but I think there'll be you know, different challenges will present themselves, but it'll be just as entertaining as another championship, albeit maybe a bit slower, but, you know, that's where other players come to the fore. So it'll be interesting to see how players adapt as well.
The strong players is what you're saying, Matt, is it? I think it might suit you all right.
It might suit me a bit better than the speedy guys that might get stuck in the mud. It might save me, but we'll wait and see.
I think, Matt, getting the GAA clubs open first is probably the... It's what we'd like to see. And then when that happens, it's probably easier to picture a championship.
Yeah, look, that's the first step in the road. You know, the government have outlined the phases, phased approach they're taking. But look, you see kind of parks out there and other sporting organisations opening their pitches with walking tracks around. And, you know, the GAA clubs are at the centre of communities out there. And I think people would really get a massive lift. And even just from terms of their well-being, to be able to see other people and interact, albeit at a distance and adhering to the guidelines. You know, the government are trusting people to be able to meet in groups of threes or fours, I think the limit is at the moment, in parks. I don't see any difference between that and, you know, a GAA club. Obviously, the question will come up around competing and training, and that's a separate conversation. But I don't understand the reasons why the gates are closed if people want to go for a stroll around there. And I think it will give people hope to be able to get back out and you know, get closer to what life was like previously. But I know they're looking into it, and I hope it happens sooner rather than later, albeit with the caveat that, you know, everyone's adhering to the guidelines outlined by the government, because the last thing anybody wants is for the virus to creep back up in numbers, you know.
Yeah, for sure, Matt, and I think I agree. People are craving a little bit of normality, and a few pucks around a GAA pitch would do a lot of people a lot of good. Matt O'Hanlon, Wexford captain, thanks so much for joining us.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. I think I'm probably in the majority of sports fans who spent a lot of the last 24 hours watching rolling news channels and seeing players and managers arrive at training grounds and looking at hairstyles and getting a bit excited about what is coming down the track, which hopefully will be the Premier League back on our screens very, very soon. And to discuss all the latest football developments, we are joined by former Republic of Ireland and Sunderland footballer Stephen Elliott. Stephen, how are you?
How's it going, Marie? Okay.
Oh yeah, we're great here now that we've got our all our buttons working. We're happy. Exactly. Out. What about you?
Yeah, all right. As well as can be, I suppose, during these strange times and that. But like you mentioned there, it seems like there's a little bit of light regarding sport at the end of the tunnel now, with a lot of the Premier League teams back in training.
Like, it's hard to get away from the situation that we're in and the conversations that we keep having and the morality of the decisions to go back training when there is still coronavirus in the community. And we've seen a good few players come out and they don't feel comfortable playing when they know that their families and their loved ones might be at risk. If you were a player now, Stephen, in this situation, playing for a club and training was back on, would you feel comfortable just taking, when you take into account where we are and the six players and backroom team coming back as positive, would you be okay with going back training?
It's a difficult one to answer when you're not in that position, but if you're looking at the majority of players seem to be kind of going back in and training, they've obviously, you feel confident enough in the kind of precautions that are in place regarding catching the virus. I know there's only a small number of people that tested positive out of all the tests they've done, so I probably would go in and win and train now. To be honest, it's one of them. Like, everybody wants to get back to normal. Even now, myself, I don't play anymore, but I do a bit of coaching now. I'm itching to get back onto the park and kind of feel the grass under my feet again. And I presume all the Premier League players are desperate to get back amongst the kind of balls again. But the thing is, as well, I think the Liverpool, a lot of the teams of the kind of top end, we'll be looking to get back. I think Liverpool players will be desperate to get back in and just get their hands on that title after such a long wait. And I know, obviously, in the background, it's the worry of the virus and stuff. But ultimately, I think Klopp was smiling around the place, because he can obviously sense that the time is getting close where he might be able to get his hands on the Premier League title.
Stephen, on that, like, that's good leadership, isn't it? Because you hear, like, Danny Rose with Newcastle, you know, he's unhappy with putting, you know, he's saying he's been compared like a lab rat, you know, and it's managing your squad and making sure everyone within it feels safe in the environment, and if it's not right for them to go in, maybe not to.
No, that's it. I've seen, obviously, Danny Rose has made a few noises now. I think Troy Deeney as well at Watford, he said he doesn't feel comfortable going in, but it's one of them. You have to respect each player, I suppose, individually, and if they don't want to go in and train, then so be it. They stay at home. But obviously, there's a lot of lads that do want to train and want to get back to normal, because it's very hard mentally. It's like everybody that are away from work at the moment. I'm sure most people want to get back into that routine, because it can affect people's mental health and kind of the way they go about the day. So I don't know. If the players don't want to go in and train, you have to respect them, and for whatever reason that may be. But I think now you're looking at it like, providing that all the tests and all the precautions are in place, then we seen the German football there the weekend, and it seemed to go along all right, albeit it wasn't very kind of, for me watching it without the crowd, it didn't seem totally right, but at least it was something to kind of watch and kind of and look at and enjoy.
I suppose the worry is, though, if more players join Troy Deeney in his stance and decide not to go back, then the club would have a fair enough argument that they're at a disadvantage.
Yeah, well, this is it. Obviously, you kind of, I know a lot of few people have been saying the likes of Troy Deeney and clubs like Watford, who are down near the bottom of the league, they're probably making a little bit more noises regarding, because of the positions they're in the table and that. Whether that has anything to do with it, I'm not too sure. See, is their captain, and I know maybe it's one of them where he's feeling that it's his responsibility kind of make this kind of the play to try and get the Premier League to take note of the situation. But I don't know, it looks like it's going to go ahead at the moment. So for me, if it's going to go ahead, then you need everybody pulling in the same direction if possible, and try and just get it going as quick as possible and as safe as possible.
Stephen, it can be tough though for pro soccer players, because everyone looks at the money and just says, you know, get them out there. If these guys, you know, are feeling like that, you know,
entertain us.
Yeah, it's a big ask, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And like, obviously, everybody, I think money, the money situation regarding this whole pandemic, obviously footballers are still getting paid and stuff now, so I don't think there'll be many Premier League footballers that will be struggling for a few bob. So I don't think it's the financial side of things, but everybody has families, and I'm sure the lads that don't want to kind of go back right now have reasons for it, albeit if it's their own family, like young kids or elder people that they're around in their family. But again, it's each individual. If you could get a player living on his own and he doesn't really kind of see many people outside of the football ground, he kind of can isolate kind of after training on his own, then there's no real major issue, I don't think, with somebody like that going back into training. But obviously, the likes of Troy Deeney, he was mentioned that his five-year-old kid has breathing difficulties. So he's just looking at the kind of the worry of bringing something home that affects his kid, which could be kind of ultimately fatal, because we've seen young kids even die from this disease now. Not many, but still there's a few cases. So you can kind of understand the players. It's a difficult scenario, but again, if the decision has been made that the football's going to get going, I presume all managers will want players pulling in direction if in the right direction if possible.
I think as well, like, six tests, it doesn't seem like a huge number when you think of all the people that have been tested. So it would give you a little bit of confidence that things are under control and you're going into a pretty safe environment.
Yeah, definitely. I think, what was it, 700 and odd tests, I think only six were positive. So again, that's really low numbers. And it's probably easy to say that unless one of those six. I've seen one of the lads off Watford, was a Mariappa, or I don't know.
Yeah,
Mariappa. Yeah, he tested positive, and I heard him come out and say that he doesn't understand how he's got it, because he hadn't left his house for the whole lockdown. But if anything, that tells you how easy it is caught, because you may kind of just brush across somebody and you might kind of get the virus. Now, he was asymptomatic. So, again, I'd say the majority of Premier League players, even if they did get it, they would be fine, because they're fit athletes, and I don't think it'll really affect them. But it's obviously who they bring it home to, and that's what I think the lads that have been worried about going back up have made that point.
And you couldn't really argue with Troy Deeney when he has a young son who has breathing difficulties. Like, that has to come first. Another issue that's come to the fore as well is how long players need to get back match fit. What do you think, Stephen? I know that Raheem Sterling has raised concerns about the game's been rushed back.
Yeah, I think we look, we can only compare it off the German football there last weekend. I think from when they went back in training, I think it was 40 days I was reading before, they went in small groups, and then eventually they build up to kind of contact training. So that took it as a whole 40 days from the first day they went back into the actual game day. So I don't know, I think certain players will probably be fitter than other players. I think, believe it or not, I think the top players will be more fitter than the other players, purely because it's it's a top quality mindset that they have. I think you only have to look at Borussia Dortmund. I watched that game, the derby game against Schalke there on the weekend, and Borussia Dortmund looked like they were bang at as sharp as anything, whereas Schalke looked like they were miles off, kind of in the middle of pre-season training. So I think once the football starts, a lot will be down to the individual players of each squad and how much they wanted to stay fit. Like, because it's I know everybody can do their running and their individual stuff, but it's the players that with their really, really strong minds that win the titles. They're the ones I think always manage to keep fitter and keep sharper.
We mentioned that too, Matt O'Hanlon, a little bit earlier as well, just how difficult it is for the real competitive people to dial it down, and you know they'll be trying to get that little edge during the team. What kind of player would you have been, Stephen?
Yeah, well, I think when you go back to training, I think I spoke to somebody else about this. When you go back into training, it's very difficult to kind of go in and train and just say, okay, we're going to kind of do tippy-tappy stuff. You literally go over, you went to training, and that when I trained, as a majority player, so I played with, once you went on that training pitch, that was it every day. You were bang at it, flying into tackles, flying in around, wanting to better your teammates so you can get into the team ahead of them. So I don't see it being any different. And again, I think it's very difficult to social distance once you're in that environment. I think you can say, like, even the thing that I found strange, even the German football, when all the subs are sitting like social distancing with the mask on, and then as soon as it's their turn to come onto the pitch, the mask is off and they're running around. Yeah.
Can't help themselves. And
yeah, so it's just like, I don't understand that whole point, but I know it's obviously, there must be scientific reasons for it, but I think once they're back in training, and then that's it. But again, they need to look at the outside. If they can do it, if they believe and they're kind of, it's scientifically proven that they can go in and play the games in a kind of crowdless kind of arena with only a certain number of people in and around the area, then by all means go ahead and do it, because there's nothing like sport to kind of get people kind of up and happy and in a positive frame of mind. Even the German football, now I wouldn't be watching a load of German football, I don't know about you guys, but I found it really good to be able to just sit and watch them live football, even albeit I wasn't really overly caring what the results were going to be.
Absolutely, any sports, even at the moment, we'll take it. We were chatting about Tyler Blendell, and unfortunately he's a rugby player that has had to cut his rugby career short, but I know you're out of the game now, and we all remember the highs, the goals against Cyprus. How are you finding the transition away from soccer?
When I first stopped playing in England, like kind of professionally, I found it a little bit difficult because I was quite young and I had injuries that I had to kind of curtail my career over there a little bit. But I've been lucky enough that I've had a few years now in the meantime to kind of get a grip of where I want to go with myself. And I've got a real liking for the coaching side of things now. I'm in the middle of getting me coaching licenses, and I'm running an academy over here in the northeast of England. And it's really enjoyable for me, and it's a routine, and it's something that again, it takes time to kind of find out when you stop playing, because as you know, you're playing football, everything's kind of, you're playing professional sport, everything's done for you, you know where you're going and that. But when you stop playing, all of a sudden you're thinking, right, where am I going to get my highs from again? Like, because it's not, I don't think anything can compare to running out in front of crowds and playing your sport and doing the business like that. But again, I think it's one of them, you have to kind of move forward, and if you find something you like doing, then just go with it, whether that's involved still in the sport or something else, and just go fully committed into that. And for me, I'm lucky enough, I'm still involved in football and I'm really enjoying it at the moment. So I didn't have time to get too down about it either. I've got four kids as well that keep me kind of active, and I've got another one on the way as well at the moment, so they help me as well.
You have no time to be thinking.
No, that's it. Like, so if I'm sitting around moody or down in the dumps, so one of them will come in and lift me right back up, that's for sure,
or ask you to do something.
You mentioned the coaching is one avenue, but what about middle distance running? Because I was looking at your Twitter feed and you've posted a few of your times. 12K in 57 minutes, 8K in 38 minutes with four kids. No wonder you're running out the door so quick. But
well, that's where it is. Like, everybody's like, we had a reunion there the other night, one of the Zoom calls with a 2012 Cup winning team from when I was at Hearts, and a few of the lads were giving me sticks saying, geez, you're doing more running now than when you play. But I was like, well, that's the whole point. It says, I've got four kids and a pregnant wife in the house, I need to get away for an hour at least just to keep my mind at ease, and that's where I'm starting to enjoy the running. And so I went for a run today, actually. The heat was probably the worst thing I ever did, man. I thought I was going to collapse when I finished today. But now there you go, you need, as I said, it's a bit of a routine, like, because you obviously don't have that routine of getting up and doing your coaching or whatever you're doing, so it's nice to have something like that to kind of look forward to, well, I say look forward to kind of, yeah. I don't know what I look forward to, but it's nice to have something to do anyway to take your mind off everything else that's going on in the world.
And you might as well be doing it now before the new baby arrives, because you won't have, you'll be under pressure then.
No, I'll be only running, I'll be running back and forth from the crib, no doubt, to doing the night feed. That'll be the only running I'll be doing then, Marie.
Stephen Elliott, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem.
Hopefully when we're chatting to you again now, we'll be chatting about on-field action, because it does feel like it is getting closer.
I'd rather chat about baby number five and how you're managing that.
I know you would. Thanks, Stephen.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Donica, you'll be delighted to know it is nearly your favourite time of the week.
Oh, yes. I love it. I love it. I love a Wednesday legend, Marie.
You too. You really do. Is there anything you want to tell us about the fifth baby that we were talking about earlier?
No, there's not. But are you hearing into conversations? You always, isn't it always when you see a little baby, you're like, oh, one more.
I think maybe if you're a man, yes.
I could totally understand that. Yeah,
we'll have to ask Jenny's opinion on that one.
But do you know what? It's certainly improved his running times. Like, if you look at Stephen's running times there, 12k in 57 minutes is decent. He's tipping along.
He really is. Right, our Wednesday legend. Who have we got, Donica?
Yeah, absolute legend tonight. And it's our highlight of the weekend. Tonight's legend is a Donegal goal-scoring machine. Whether it's for his club or inter-county football, bashing the Aussies up or down, playing soccer in the UEFA Cup, Brendan Devaney has scored goals for fun, and we are delighted he joins us now. Brendan, how are you?
Yes, Donna, the very best, and Marie as well. I hope you're keeping good.
Goal-scoring machine. I think that's probably the nicest thing you can say to a forward, is it, Brendan?
Marie, for a start, this legend thing, and we were uncomfortable with it. I've been invited to a lot of these nights with legends, you know, particularly up around Ulster and that, and the likes of maybe Peter Canavan or Tony Scoydon or Oisín McConville, and I think I've been on the bill, maybe I've kind of sneaked on the bill underneath their heading, if you like. So we were uncomfortable with the whole legend thing now, but listen, we'll roll with the goal scorer. I'm happy enough for that.
Brendan, what puts you off it? Is it that it's, you know, it's kind of seen as ageing? Is that it? It's a bit ageist.
No, not at all. It's on a more the fact that I think it should be reserved maybe for the best of the best. So I think maybe the team I played on, it's, you know, you play in a team, obviously, it's not an individual thing. You would have liked to have thought you did your best. It was days and went good and bad. But I look at legends things, and I'm always probably looking at maybe some of the heroes I had looking back. They say the likes of Tony Boylan, Martin McHugh and these guys, when I was growing up, to me, they're the legends. And I've never, you're right, maybe I haven't grown up enough to think anyway of my own self in that regard. You know, I certainly would never put myself in that bracket.
Did Michael Murphy recently not say that you were an idol of his growing up?
Yeah, Marie, but I think at the time there maybe wasn't a lot to choose from. But it was, in fairness, I used to see Michael as a wee kid growing up, and he'd be always down about. His dad was GA mad, Mick, and Michael would always be about games, and you'd see him even at training and different things when we were close to, like, round training around Letterkenny and Balbuffet. And Michael all of a sudden just shot up into this monster of a man. He joined our squad when he was about 17. And yeah, he said to me one night, he texted me, he says, make sure you watch the Sunday game. So there was a legends thing on. And be honest, it's the humblest, most humbling thing I've ever seen for Michael Murphy. For me, by far the best player ever played for Donegal, to say that I was his hero growing up, I mean, that was pretty amazing. And I wonder, you know, I was thinking about this one day, has anyone's hero turned around and then been their hero? Because Michael would be mine now, so I think it's gone full circle.
Donica, did that happen to you ever?
No,
Paul O'Connell?
No, right, okay, fair enough. No, I suppose, but you're right, though. When you, it's mad, Brendan, isn't it? When you look at them now, and they can give you such a lift, and you nearly need to be a little bit removed from your sport to start appreciating it again.
Exactly, Donna, and actually, I do a wee podcast on Donegal on Highland Radio there, and I interviewed Michael on Monday, and I wasn't going to bring up the hero thing. I was kind of hoping he might. I'm only joking. But we didn't go into it. But talking about Michael, it was fascinating again. And, you know, going back to the legends thing, and probably us, you know, not winning what we probably should have done as a team. It took Michael 4 years before he won one game in Ulster, and a lot of people would forget that. Everybody just looks to all the good times now in Donegal. But he himself, and this put me back a bit and made me think a lot about how you look at your game. He was saying them first 4 years, he says, and you'll find this hard to believe, was every bit as exciting for me, because I was new on the Donegal team, I was coming up playing with my heroes. He says, I was just buzzed up by the whole thing. And I found that it really changed up my mind and how I felt about things. And I also interviewed David Brady. And forget about the All-Irelands he played in. I think he played in 6 or 7 finals. His top game ever was an under-10 Streets League a final down in Ballina. So people have such different ways of looking back at sport. So you're right. Sometimes I think myself, I didn't want to look back at all because it's so many scars in there. And to be honest, they're still in there. So I suppose it's a balancing act. I've been very critical of myself when I was playing in that, and it really ate me up, when we lost big games and that, and I've still, the scars are still there, you know.
It must be hard, Brendan, all right, knowing, like, if you take a step back and look at the players that you had and knowing that you had a really good team and you were on a really good team and you probably could have got there.
Hi, Marie. Well, you know, not to make excuses, because this sport is what it is. To me, the best team wins. The best team wins the championship by and large. The best team will win leagues. And that's how it is. And you got to just say that's sport. But for us, the best Armagh team that ever was in my era. And the best Tyrone team as well was in there. And probably more Armagh was more our nemesis. And what happened with Donegal was we kept changing managers and we kept our own style. Armagh had changed things. They started to bulk up. They started using tactics. And we just kept sticking their own. Everybody kind of liked Donegal. We had a nice brand of football. We were more what you call a southern team in terms of we just played the game. Whereas Armagh, Ulster was a tough place to be. And we just never got streetwise enough. We never picked up a tactical plan, I think, enough to counteract all the things they were doing. We needed to really do an Armagh on Armagh. I think that's the one regret I would say down the line. If I had to go back and do it all again, I think we needed to put a plan in place to counteract what they did. And the big thing was winning Ulster. It wasn't even about... It never is until you won the provincial. You can't think about it, obviously, in All-Ireland until after that. So that was the thing, I suppose, Marie, where we came up short. Just on how good Armagh, particularly, were at winning games. You know, they just never seemed to drop to a level where they had what you call an off day.
The stick that people always kind of beat you with is the culture and the culture within that team. Do you think that that's fair?
Something like you probably see those things in wee videos going around the world now where a guy's a Coke, a 2 litre bottle of Coke, and he drops the Mentos in. That there, we Donegal team with a bottle of Coke, the Mentos is any alcohol at all. That's kind of what we were like. We're sitting there nice and calm, and drops the booze, and everything goes mad. But Marie, it's the stories, I suppose, grow legs, what it was you had a lot of characters together. But when it came to training, and actually Michael said this himself, actually in the meeting last day, he says, listen, I was part of, he came at the end of a lot of that, you know, Brian McGaver was still there. He says, we trained, you know, as hard as anybody, as hard as we did then. Now, training changed, I think, and the lifestyle changed in the Jim McGuinness's time. But whatever we had to do, we did. The problem was, say we lost a big game in Ulster final. At the time, you were allowed to go on the session. And once we were led on the session, you know, it was Wild West stuff. It kicked off, and then I suppose people would see us on the lash the next day, and I suppose it didn't look pretty at that stage, and some of them stories got out, and you know, that's how all that stuff kind of came about.
Brendan, now we're talking. Let's relive one of those stories. Any gossip? Just on it, I'm interested. You mentioned the scars, and I look back as well at my own career, and they're the ones that stand out, and when you reflect, you wish you could go back and chat to that group, because maybe you're a bit like me, but you're nearly full of self-doubt and you don't realise how good a team you have.
Yeah, there was times, you know, where things was right, and I guess, you know, at club level, like I've won 7 championships for unions, and you've seen the other side of it. You know, I was lucky enough to play for Ulster and Railway Cups, and then, you know, play for Ireland in that in 98, and then go to Australia in 2001. I played Gaelic in England, played in America. So sometimes when you weigh it up like that, you're like, God, what a brilliant time I've had playing football. What amazing experience. I've met some unbelievable people and still am doing bits and pieces of media and that. So it's how you look at it. And if you're the same as me, Donna, you look at it too critical. You're too, maybe, I don't know. I know myself, it used to absolutely kill me after games. And I still find it hard to look back. But you're right, I would love to go back. And I know now, probably towards the end of my career, I realised much more about tactics, and I became captain of the club, and I became very involved in tactics and how we were set up tactically as a team, and also our mental approach in that. But I found that so late. Up until that point, it was all kind of play a bit of ball, enjoy your life, have the crack. It just wasn't that disciplined that we had to go down that road completely. So, and I think the big change with Donegal, as you've seen, they went ultra, and look how quick the rewards came, and I think football's gone there now. So it's at the time, I suppose, you had one foot in kind of enjoying your life and you know, playing a bit of Gaelic, even playing a bit of soccer. You know, I mean, imagine that now, Donna. Yeah. I played for Harps on a Saturday night at 8 o'clock on a muddy pitch. Played for Donegal at 2 o'clock on a Sunday. No wonder I needed a hip operation there a few weeks back.
But you were able to do it, though, you know. And when you did play for Donegal, and people have so many great memories of you doing amazing things on the pitch. Okay, you don't have the All-Ireland medals maybe that other players have, but like when you're Michael Murphy's hero, like, and you've done so many great things, like you can't but look back and say, you know, I did all right.
That's it. I mean, I suppose we'll put that in the gravestone, Michael Murphy's hero, probably. Yeah. That's the best thing I could do. But no, I mean, you're right. There was days, listen, I felt, it's strange now even talking about it, there was days I really felt unmarkable and I felt very at peace and really enjoyed what I was doing. But they were often playing for club and very few and far between for Donegal, and definitely not in Ulster. And I think after the initial few years, like my first Ulster final, 98 against Derry, the famous Brawley late goal, I was man of the match in that game. And at the time, I hadn't played underage, and I came in with this mad confidence. I really didn't really even know what, not that I didn't know what I was doing, but I was just free. And then next thing, I was maybe our most targeted player, and then all this weight came on me. I was kicking frees, there was a lot of pressure attached to it, and I really stopped enjoying the football. Honestly, I remember going to Clonus a few times and actually dreading the game, dreading it. And looking back at it now, it was no mindset at all to go into a game. And I hadn't got the skills myself. And if I could coach myself now, I would know how to get it out. And you've seen, particularly with Jim at the time, and you could tell so much. The only thing I was envious of, he obviously had told the players, right, work hard, forget about scoring, kick your free, show for the ball, work, we won as a team. You don't have to be the 1-5. You don't have to kick this. You don't have to kick that. That's all the pressure that was on me going into some of them games. And it didn't. When it didn't happen then, as I say, sometimes I was really lost, yeah, in terms of my life, because it was your whole life at the time. So when I look back at it now, there was some games where I had that freedom and I really felt, you know, on top of it. But there was a lot of weight there as well. And that's probably a regret more than missing out in medals.
Brendan, I watched your Michael Murphy podcast earlier today, and you know, you're just like mentioning Clonus and the big days and Ulster, and you said something at the start of it that really resonated with me, and it's just the importance of having the GA chat now and remembering those championship days, because we're all really yearning from them, I think.
Yeah, very good on you. I was kind of thinking about the whole thing of sport, and even what we're talking about at the start there, it kind of ties in that we sometimes just look at the final and we look at these teams and we forget about, you know, Michael kept talking about the journey and about appreciating them first 4 years, even when he didn't win an Ulster game. And there's so much tied into playing. And now when I go to games and meeting people, I mean, I pinch myself. I mean, when you go into Clonus to a big game, or particularly Croke Park, the facilities, and you walk out there and you think, you know, wow, I'm doing some broadcasting around this. I think that's amazing. You meet so many people, and you know, the simple things of going down the street after a match, having a beer, and all the debate that goes around games. You know, it's very much about who we are, and I've played other sports in that, and there's nothing comes close to the GAA, because it is families and it is where you're from, and it's just a different feeling.
Yeah, Brendan, thanks so much for joining us. Certainly our Wednesday legend, for everything you did, not only with Donegal, but when you talked out with Ireland and on. So proud of you, and thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Donna. Right, Marie. Thanks.
Thanks.
Nice talking to you.
Thanks so much. That is all we have time for.
Game on 2FM.